This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora koutou, I'm Paul Allen, inviting you to join me for Resilient Otago, brought to you every month by Emergency Management Otago. We'll discuss natural hazards, preparing for and responding to emergencies. Everyone has a part to play in being prepared and creating a more resilient community. Join us for Resilient Otago, Monday morning at 9:30 and Wednesday at 12:30 and online at oar.org.nz. Tēnā koutou katoa, nō o te pōti aho, ko Paul Allen tokawekua, kei te rākau whakamarumaru o tākau aho e mahi ana. Tēnā koutou katoa. Greetings everyone, my name is Paul Allen, I'm the Resilience Advisor for Emergency Management Otago, based here in Dunedin. Welcome to Resilient Otago, a program about natural hazards, preparing for emergencies and how we respond to them. In the last show, we talked about personal and whānau preparedness and the things that you can do to be more prepared, things like having getaway kits and being prepared and getting to know your neighbours and stuff like that. In this episode, we're looking at communities and how do communities become more prepared when emergencies happen and how do they respond to them. So today we're going to talk with Derek Shaw, he's the Emergency Management Advisor based up in Central Otago, and Judy Martin, a member of the Waikawaiti Community Response Group. Each community generates unique and innovative ideas to their challenges. Emergency Management Otago encourages and supports these local initiatives. So, Derek, kia ora, welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul, thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. How do communities become better prepared?
Well, I think it's all about preparation, the things that you'd want to do, and if I can use the term wartime, but do them in peacetime. Do the preparation and do the thinking before you have to. And that's not onerous, that's just... probably placing yourself in the mindset of essentially tonight thinking about the power goes off at 8 o'clock. What would you do? It may come back on in 10 minutes, but it could be out for some reason for longer, for 12 hours, for 24 hours. What would you do? Where's the headlamp? And where are the kids? Where's the family? Where's the relatives? What's the plan? So it's a case of just, you don't have to be a doomsday prepper or anything like that and dig a bunker in the back garden. You just need to perhaps turn your mind to where the headlamp is, where the emergency supplies are, something like that. And emergency supplies don't need to be an onerous task. They could just be items that you've gathered over time, sort of one shop at a time, and kept them there knowing where they are. So, but I think one of the biggest things is knowing your community, and that starts right down at the whānau level, is know your family, know where their habits, know where they are, know what they would happen, or get them to know what would happen if for some reason you couldn't communicate with them, but also your neighbours. As simple as keeping in touch with your neighbours, again, just checking in every now and then. It's not intrusive, it's just... if you're heading away, just let the neighbours know, and I'm sure that would be reciprocated, just so that you know the dynamics. Maybe the neighbours could be elderly, or they may have wee kids, or something like that. So it's not intrusive, and it's not invading anyone into privacy. It's just probably getting back to almost the 60s, really, almost the cup of sugar across the fence sort of thing before the internet is helping each other out. Staying in touch, staying alert to people's needs, while also springboarding off your own preparedness from within your own household.
There's a number of things which you've mentioned, like the whānau preparedness, getting yourself prepared, and getting to know your neighbours. Getting to know neighbours is such an important thing, and again, a very affordable thing to be able to do. So you don't need money to be able to introduce yourself to a neighbour. So that is really helpful.
Yeah.
How important is to know not just your neighbourhood, but the actual environment that you live in?
Yeah, that's right. So you need to probably know where the hazards are. You don't, or where the hazards are coming from. And that's you don't need to be a geotech engineer or anything like that. You just need to maybe stay in tune with the weather advisories, and just be aware of them. So they come across all different sorts of media. So it's not just you've got all printed media these days, and so many things are instantaneous across social media, that there's a potential rain watch or rain warning or red warnings. They are foreshadowed some time in advance. So just turn your mind to think, okay, we're going to have some wet days here, so we might just need to get a couple of extra supplies in, or if there's something it's going to be cold or a significant weather event, especially over winter, there's a lot more impact there than it would be generally over summer. So if you're going to be cold, just think about moving a bit of a wood supply for a couple of days closer to the house. If it's out the back where the headlamp is in case the power goes off. One of the things that I often get laughed at about is filling up the gas bottle at the end of the barbecue season, just in case you need an alternative way to cook food for some reason. Now, I've just done that and found that it was almost empty. So I was going into a sort of autumn winter with almost an empty gas bottle, and it was simple, and it's always going to be there. It's not going to go off, and so it'll be good for next spring, summer, if I do need it. But just checking to see that there's maybe an extra dog roll or pet food or something, even if it's right in the base of the freezer. I'm sure that the pets won't mind if all of a sudden, for some reason, you can't get to the supermarket, and it might be out of its usable date for just a wee while. I'm sure the dog or the cat wouldn't mind if they were hungry enough. So it's just turning your minds to things like that. But the neighbours, getting to know your neighbours, getting to know the hazards in your area, whether it's a wind event, a snow event, flooding, which is our most common hazard in Otago. Maybe just moving things away from, if you've got a stream near your home or on your boundary or something like that. It applies to different people in different ways, but just but include the family in your planning. So if you're sitting down at the table, just have a discussion about what all the members of the family think, because if they all input into the plan, they'll have the ownership of the plan, and when you do need it, they'll be invested in it.
There's a number of existing community groups in most communities. How is the best way to sort of work with these groups to prepare for emergencies? And we've got place-based groups, we've got neighbourhood support, we've got a number of different groups around. How important is it to get together and be connected with those organisations?
It's probably all very much up to the individual, but from working with the community groups in Central Otago, what I specifically target is people that are going about their own activity within the community. They might be maybe a four-wheel drive club, or often hall groups or community groups like that, and citizens sort of groups within the smaller communities. So they are organising various things anyhow, and it's those people that and those groups that I approach, or they approach me, and we discuss civil defence emergency management. So it bolts on to things that are already existing within the community, because if they just were solely civil defence and that's all they did, then they might not actually get activated for a long time. But if they are going about sort of betterment within the community, then and have that civil defence thought. And as I said, things like the four-wheel drive clubs, they're organising trips at weekends and that. But a lot of them are also prepared to help the emergency services, including civil defence, in events of flooding and snowfall. But you can easily seek them out. And that's where there might be a few downsides to the internet, but there's so much information on your local community, on your local territorial authorities, emergency planning, Otago emergency planning. A lot of it's on the internet, so you can get some great ideas from there. So just look for opportunities. Otherwise, contact your local emergency management advisor, and every one of the territorial authorities, of the five authorities, have them in in Otago, and we're readily available and just a phone call away, and we'll be more than happy to come out to you just to speak to you about getting prepared. So that's something that we would like to spend the time to do, especially if you've got a group. It's not just an individual or family, but it's a group offer, so especially around service groups and the like. So if we can get you that much, two steps better prepared, it won't be the be-all and end-all, but you'll be turn your mind to it when that unexpected event does happen.
Mm. We've got a number of community response groups around Otago as well, which are dedicated groups looking at emergency response as well, from a local, providing us local information and reports back into our operation centres when in those activations as well.
Yeah, and with Otago, with such, you know, the environment is probably why a lot of us live here, but it's also the environment where the hazards come from. And the tyranny of distance is one of the things, especially when if you look at some of the communities such as Waipiata or Glenorchy or Makarora, they're absolutely stunning locations, but there's probably some of the most isolated communities in New Zealand. When you have to try and get through to Waipiata or in the winter, a significant snow event or something like that. So those communities are all active in one form or other with organised groups. And it says civil defence may not be their sole purpose, but it's parallel purposes, and they definitely come together with their organisation and their planning and their caring for others and caring for their community when the need arises. So look, just have a look around, speak to your neighbours, speak to the wider community, and you'll find a service group or community response group in most areas in one form or other.
And again, if they want to find out more about setting up a group or how to get more prepared, then contacting the local emergency management advisor through the Otago CDEM.govt.nz website or through the local territory authority as well. There's different ways to get through.
And it's so much easier to do that when you've got 5 minutes on a sunny April afternoon than at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in June or July. Take time, have a look, and have a conversation. I'm sure it'll be beneficial to you and to the community.
Yeah, always the best time to plan for an emergency when it's not happening.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So you're listening to Resilient Otago, a program about natural hazards, preparing for emergencies, and how we respond to them. We'll be back after a short break to continue our conversation about how you can be part of your community preparedness.
What would you do if you had to leave your home suddenly? Could you easily put your hands on your medication, a torch, or your pet supplies? Emergencies can happen at any time. Prepare now and get all your essentials into one bag, ready to grab if you ever need to evacuate. To find out more, go to www.otagocdem.govt.nz.
You're listening to Resilient Otago, a program about natural hazards, preparing for emergencies, and how we respond to them. We've just heard from Derek Shaw, who's the Emergency Management Advisor up in Central Otago. Now joining us, we have Judy Martin from Waikawaiti. She is a member of the Community Response Group in that area. Welcome, Judy.
Hi, Paul.
Tell us a wee bit about why you joined the Community Response Group, and actually tell us a wee bit about Waikawaiti as well.
Well, yeah, most people probably know Waikawaiti as that strip of main road with a few shops and things on that you drive through just at the very end of Dunedin. But actually the township goes right down to the beach. It's got a population of about 600. But we include in the area as well two other neighbourhoods, Karatani, which is the beautiful fishing village just down the road a wee bit, and also Hawkesbury at the site of the old cherry farm site. So those are the three settlements clustered around the Waikawaiti River. which is one of the main issues that we have to think of when we have floods, of course.
And that's something which Derek talked about, the capacity for isolation if, in this case, State Highway 1 floods, which it has done in the past. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So the area has a community response group. Tell us a wee bit about that.
Right. Well, I joined because at that stage I was chair of the local community organisation, which Paul has been, Derek has been saying how important they are to tap into. And this is really where ours started. But I would have joined anyway because all the knowledge about climate change makes you aware that things are getting bad and they're likely to get worse. And the best way of dealing with in a situation like that is to strengthen your community and be prepared. So that's where I came into it.
So when emergencies aren't happening, what sort of things has the community response group done?
We get together every once in a while. We are sort of, most of it is sort of organised by our brilliant community worker who's got tabs on everybody, and she's in contact through, you know, the police, the fire services, the vet centre, the health centre, all the different useful organisations, but also the key people in the area, venues, all those sort of things. We keep in touch by email, and there's the Gets Ready website that is a way of tapping into individual people who are interested as well.
That's great. It's not just something which you do and where you practice and nothing happens. There was a incident a couple of years ago where we had some heavy rain and the township of Waikawaiti was actually cut off. What was your role in that? How did it work with the response group? Because that was relatively shortly after you joined, I think, the response group as well. And it was over a New Year period.
We were fairly new at that stage and we'd hardly got going. And, of course, it was January the 2nd. So it was right in the middle of the holidays, totally unexpected. The community worker was away on holiday, of course, and it just kept on raining. And I was thinking, you know, is it going to rain? How's it going to go? And it just, you know, it got wetter and wetter. And in the end, the Waikawaiti River went over the road at our end, so we were at one end, and State Highway 1 was also closed down at Mahino, I think. So there was a section of State Highway 1 that was completely closed off, full of holiday makers, and we were at one end. So after humming and haring for all day, really, we went and opened our event centre and got ready, and then people started arriving quite late in the evening. Luckily, it was summer, so it was still quite light. I really missed having our community worker there, because she would have managed things a lot better, I think. But what with social media, and the contacts that I had, I think we managed to get the important people on board.
And some of the things which you were able to do as part of that community, you had people who were trapped, they needed somewhere to sleep, you needed to provide a cup of tea and coffee and stuff like that, which you did. You managed to, because of the networks and knowledge that you had, you're able to even organise accommodation, which, okay, the people had needed to pay for it, but you had you're even able to organise some of that as well, I believe.
We were very, very lucky in our village to have a huge venue, our big event centre, that's got an auditorium and several other small rooms, and it's right on the main road, so we can just open that and put the flag out, and people will come in there. Yeah, but you're right, because it happened late at night, and I don't think the road opened till 3 a.m., we were lucky that we had Sidey Lodge, which is a girl guide camp in the village also. And part of my panic early on was, how do I contact the manager of Sidey Lodge? And their niece replied eventually and said, oh, you know, I'll give her your phone number. Mm. So we got that open. Unfortunately, since then, it's closed down as a camp, and it's been sold on, so that option isn't open to us anymore. But we do have a large carpeted building that I suppose people could bunk down in an emergency.
But the big lesson from that is you were able to look after people. The community, this is something which you did it yourselves, because you were isolated. We weren't, as an emergency management, wasn't able to get to you as well, and it was something which we supported you as best we could from afar at that stage.
Yes, that was so useful.
We've just got a couple of minutes left, but what would you say would be a couple of things that went really well and a couple of things that perhaps didn't go so well?
What went really well was how wonderfully everyone in the community that heard about it responded. The funny thing was that apart from being wet, it didn't affect the village at all. It was only passers through. But people came down to the event centre. They said, oh, I've got a caravan, I've got such and such. People answered on social media. The pub across the road kept its kitchen open to make meals for people. And, the response was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
What didn't go well was we should have opened up much earlier and just settled it and said, this is what we're doing. And if we'd been better prepared at that stage, we would have had a list of numbers and people that I could ring who would be volunteers. We've got that organized now, but it was early days then.
And that shows down the ideal for being prepared and putting these plans and having these conversations while the sun's shining is an important thing to do. So you would encourage people to get involved in groups like that?
Oh, I think so. In an ideal world, you wouldn't need to, because everyone, as Derek said, you know the neighbours, and everybody could keep an eye on everybody else. And that's largely what did and does and did happen then. Mm. You have to be careful because people move in and out and you don't always know what's going on. It's just really important not to just rely on your usual networks and not just to think that everybody's on Facebook, because they won't be. And there may not be power, of course.
That's right, yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for speaking with us, Judy and Derek. We really appreciate you taking your time out of your days to talk to us. If people want to find out a lot more about emergency management Otago, about being prepared or getting communities prepared, please go to our website, www.otagocdem.govt.nz. So once again, Judy and Derek, thank you. And reminder that you can listen to episodes of these Resilient Otago shows on the Otago Access Radio website, and they're available as podcasts, so you can listen to those as well. But thank you very much for listening to us today, and you shall hear from us again in the future.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.